The lights are on red. We're away.
MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, September 26, 2008. This is Bob Hayes, your host, here today to bring you, as always, the best in motorcycle road racing stuff. And this is episode number 147, which I think I failed to mention. So let's see. We got a little bit of a more manageably length show today. We're right around an hour or so. Did a call with Jules. Had some good stuff. We were talking about control tires, World Superbike, a little tiny bit about Motegi. Just a sort of general all over the map kind of a show. Nothing super on topic. One thing, we mentioned that Jules' photos from Indy, where he shot, I don't know, something crazy like 5,000 photos at Indy. And he's put up many, many of them, not all 5,000, but many of them on his website in his gallery. So I'm going to put a link to that on the MotoGPOD.com website. You got to take a look at some of these pictures. He got some really, really amazing stuff, both on-track action, you know, cool guys going around corners, knees on the deck and all that sort of thing, plus just some fun kind of, you know, sights and sounds of Indy, well, sights of Indy, that sort of thing going on. So definitely check those out. We've got a couple other links that are up there as well about some stuff that we're talking about in the call. So we'll let you wait till the call for that. And I think other than that, we're about ready to go ahead and get started. So why don't we just do that and go ahead and get started. All right, we got Jules on the phone today. How you doing, Jules?
Doing good. How are you, Bob?
Good, good. Excellent. Kind of a not a super mega exciting week of news as far as MotoGP is concerned, but we did have a couple of really cool World Superbike races.
Yep, and actually good World Supersport race too, I believe, but unfortunately I didn't get to see it.
I have not one recorded, but I have not yet watched it. But I caught both the Superbike races just a little while ago, in fact. Super World Bikes, as I'm going to call them now forever. that's alluding to a post on Ride On 2 that, which unfortunately I don't have in front of me.
No, it's, I have it. It's from Tornado. And later, I think in this call, I'll read a little bit of it. It's quite
clever. Yeah, it'll fit in with what we're kind of going to talk about a little bit later just as well. But in any case, you know, I've always called them World Super Dupers, and which you know, I kind of enjoy, but I think I like Super World Bikes as well. But in any case, in the World Super Duper Bikes, they went to Vallelunga, which is second year they've been at that circuit, right?
Yeah.
You know, Max Biaggi's hometown circuit and all that kind of thing. A little bit like Donington, where it starts off mega, super fast, flowing, nice course, and then goes into this sort of complex of tight hairpins and, you know, the parking lot corners. Right. And some interesting stuff. I mean, race one was good, but it wasn't, you know, an edge-of-your-seat nail-biter.
Well, it kind of was. It's just that nothing actually came out of that nail biting because
that's true. Yeah, they were very close, but yeah, the position just stayed the same.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like nobody actually made the move.
However, race two was pretty much a nonstop edge of the seat. Right, nobody's going to be dozing off
Right from the beginning.
Right from the beginning. Yes. If you haven't seen the World Superbike races, well, sorry, we're going to talk about them. But if you have, that Max Biaggi's crash was just horrific. That was one of the worst-looking crashes I've seen in a while, as far as where you look at it and it's like, oh, my God, people are going to be hurt from that, you know?
And they walked – I mean, he walked away, you know?
Yes, he was limping a bit. And I think Sefaglu was relatively mobile, too. He was down a little longer and they were tending to him, but I don't think he – I think he walked away, too, eventually, did he not?
Yes, he did.
Yeah. They were so close. Biaggi was on the front row. What was our front row? It was Bayless, Corser, Haga, and Biaggi, right? And in that race, too, the Yamahas got off to a real good start, and Biaggi was sort of – they were all just jammed in, and I guess his brake lever got touched or something, huh?
I don't know. Actually, I have not read anything about the crash. I went to Max Biaggi's website, and all they said was that, you know, he posted a thing and he said he's fine. He didn't talk about what actually happened.
Yeah, that was a comment from Scott Smart on the color commentator guy on on the regular World Superbike feed, and that's sort of what it looked like, because
it looked like he touched the back of Courser's bike, actually.
That's a possibility, that's what too.
It looked like it took him off his racing line, and because they're all packed together, he just had nowhere to go. He got hit by another bike, and then he just started oscillating, and eventually, it's amazing that there was no, it was just him and Sofoglu that got involved in that, because one other guy actually went off the track.
I want to say Cheka. Altea bikes. Yeah, I don't know who it was, and I meant to find out, and I'm not sure. It could have been Cheka. He was bouncing around through the field like a pachinko machine ball. You know what I mean?
nice.
And it's just, it was horrific. I'm not exactly sure. I mean, the camera angle just wasn't that great, the one that I saw on the main broadcast, and I haven't had a chance to go and try and look for anything else or anything. But exactly how Sofoglu hit him, because there was all kinds of smoke already coming up at the point, and Sofoglu nails him, and just end over end, right in the middle of the track, riders all over the place, guys sliding right across the straight. It was really ugly. Yeah. But they didn't. They never even had to red flag it, which was kind of slick. So then after that, it was just this, like I said, edge of your seat, primarily between Haga and Bayless.
Yeah, Haga and Bayless were incredible. This is the race. This is the kind of racing that we love seeing in superbikes. Those two guys just do not pull punches at all. I mean, it's amazing. They were totally touching fairings and.
Both races. Haga is coming down that front straight. He's like leading on Bayless. It's like, get out of the way. It was great stuff. And some of the passes the guy makes, I mean, they don't call him Nitro Nori for nothing.
Right.
He's just insane. You know, these just, and he makes them stick, you know.
He makes them stick, totally.
He always takes such an unusual line, which this race, the camera angles really, I don't know, something about the way they put the cameras and everything. It was a little hard to see. Sometimes you'd even, a pass would happen and you weren't even aware that it had happened because you were staring at the bikes dead on and you've got no, depth perception. And all of a sudden it's like, wow, Bayless is in front. But he just takes these. It's always like Haga's line is always a little bit different than what everybody else is doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And but in any case, it's definitely a no guts, no glory. And Haga won both races, which was really, really cool. But the race two was definitely not decided right on up till about halfway around the last lap.
Yeah. what I loved about race two was, they were basically saying, points wise, this was the round where Bayless had his first chance to really wrap it up. Certainly by finishing second, all he needed to do was get somebody to get in front of Courser, who was in third, and that would give him enough points to claim the championship. And sure enough, on the last lap, Fabrizio comes out, who really actually wasn't even figuring that much in the race. For most of the race, he was cutting through the field, and then entering that last lap, I believe, was just at the last lap he passed Courser, and really basically guaranteed that Bayless, all Bayless had to do at that point, of course Bayless didn't know that this was going on behind him, but all Bayless had to do was finish second place. He would have been a world champion. But then Bayless fell off.
Yes. And
it was amazing.
Yeah, because Fabrizio had been trucking along in fourth from all the way from lap four through lap 23. And then on the last lap, he managed to get past Courser.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Yeah.
He did his job. He totally did his job.
Yeah, big time. But yeah, and Bayless, now was that the same corner that Bayless had had a major wobble?
He had the wobbles through it, yeah, exactly, earlier.
Mm-hmm. So something about that corner and his tire wear and this and that and all that sort of thing, it was giving him some troubles. And he just went down on the last lap, and he managed to get the bike up and finished I think he finished 16th,
just out of the points. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
And Haga took the win. So Haga's actually, only 10 points behind Courser in the championship.
Right, right. Both of whom they're so far behind Bayless, that as usual, it's not mathematically finished, but it may as well be. Because right now we're Bayless 369, Courser is 290, so 79 points back, and then Haga's at 280.
Yeah, there's six races left.
Four.
Oh, so, I'm
only
sorry,
two
four.
Weekends. Yeah, yeah.
Two weekends, four races. So
100 points left for World Super Dupers.
Yeah, it's a done deal, obviously. But it's going to be interesting to see if he actually wraps it up at the next race.
Which Manny Kerr, not, if I recall correctly, not one of the world's most exciting tracks.
No, it's actually one that Haga actually rides well at also. So.
Yeah, yeah, should be good.
We had a good race.
And then Poimao is the last race of the season, which is a new track for him. That should be interesting.
Right.
I think different track in Portugal.
The very interesting thing about both races, let's check this out. First place, Haga. Second place, some other guy. Third place, Corser. Fourth place, Neukirchner. Fifth, Cheka. Both races.
Really?
The only thing was the second place in first race was Biaggi. Second race, it was Fabrizio.
Yeah, I was really bummed when Biaggi crashed out of that race.
Two, you mean?
Yeah, huh?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Race two, of course.
Race two, when he crashed out of race two, sorry. Yeah, because, you know, I like Max Biaggi. When he was the bad boy in MotoGP, he was the guy you'd love to hate or whatever kind of a thing that he, the role that he played, and he played it well. And I always sort of liked watching him battle with Rossi and stuff, and I thought it was cool when he came to World Supers, and he's, you know, doing reasonably well. He's sixth in the championship this year with a fairly spotty season.
Yeah, he had a lot of crashes.
Yeah, this yeah. Year. And a lot of no points races. He's had his fair share of problems, but you know, he's doing all right. And this, you know, for him, this is his home race. It's very close to Rome or right near Rome, and you know, to crash like that, that's not good. So, well, too bad. But so yeah, they've had a good season. World Superbikes is definitely some good racing action if you like you know, the close racing and the definitely not afraid of contact out there with guys like, well, all the Japanese racing in World Supers this year are just they're all of a somewhat similar caliber of just insane. I mean, you know, like I say, Haga is awesome to watch. He's just fantastic. But I mean, Kianari and Kageyama are neither of them are, you know, slouches either. When you see them on their game, they're doing really, really well.
Kianari is definitely growing into a fabulous rider. Of the likes of Haga, actually, he reminds me a lot of Haga's style. You know, not just because he slides around, but because he's just so brutal.
Insane. Yeah. Exactly. I agree. And Yuki Okagiyama has always had that quote where they asked him, you know, what went through your mind when you crashed? And he said, nearly my bollocks. So I've always thought that was a pretty cool quote, especially when you're speaking in a language that is not your first language.
That's great.
But,
yes. One funny thing that happened on the gear cool down lap on race two was they brought out an Italian flag to drape over Fabrizio, and it looked like they spray painted a four, you know, his number is 84, onto the flag. I think it was really meant for Biaggi. There was a three there, and they like fixed the three into an eight and added the four.
I wouldn't be surprised.
It looked weird.
Yeah.
So that was kind of funny.
It's like the homemade bed sheet Rossi flag that Corey Salovey and Devin.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Doing
that's right.
Yeah, yeah, same sort of thing.
There's like 10 photos of those. Yes. Of them making it.
Yes, we have dimed them out. Now they stole a hotel bed sheet to make their. Make their Rossi flag. Well, all right. Let's see. When's their next race? They're October 5th, so a couple weeks. Going to Magny Cur in France, and should be good stuff there for superbikes. We'll definitely want to watch that one. But this weekend, we've got MotoGP at Motegi.
And before we forget, check your times, because remember, Japan's far ahead of us, so most likely the race in your area, if you live in the U.S., is going to be shown at on Saturday, so don't miss it.
Right, if you're watching it online, like at MotoGP.com. Regular schedule, on it's back on speed, and they're at their more or less sort of usual time on Sunday.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry, yeah, I was talking about for people who, like me,
Right. If you're watching it online, it does come on much, much earlier. Or, you know, if you're in Europe, it's going to come on at a weird time for you. So, so make sure that you check your local listings and that sort of thing. But yeah, Speed at least is not showing it at what, you know, 11 o'clock Eastern on Sunday night, like they did
Sunday night
with Misano. Talking about Speed and CBS and ABC, I want to throw this in here real quickly. I just want to mention this. I was kind of thinking of doing a Pepsi challenge again because I like doing them, and it's an easy way to fill time on the show and stuff, and it's fun, and people seem to enjoy it. But I was collecting together the stuff, and I had started watching the NBC coverage of the race, like, I don't know, the Monday night that I got back from Indy. So, you know, it's almost, you know, 10 days ago now. And, I turned it off after about 15 minutes because it was driving me nuts. I thought it was just so bad. So I ended up watching the official MotoGP.com.
Who was doing
Dorna
it?
Feed.
Who's,
say again?
Who were the commentators?
For NBC, it was Ralph Shaheen, who's normally on Speed. He does a lot of their other series and, I think he does the NASCAR, you know, but he's one of the other, he's been there a long time. He's a, you know, the guy is a professional. Ralph Shaheen, Kevin Schwantz was doing color with him. And then some guy I'd never heard of, and unfortunately his name escapes me other than that his first name was Floyd, was doing pit commentary. And they, a little bit of it was that, you know, there was a bit of an accelerated schedule, you know, at Indy. There was a break in the weather. It's like, it's 3 o'clock. Let's get this race going. So there was absolutely nothing as far as any pre-race, you know, explanation, stuff like this. I mean, you're doing this on over-the-air television for an audience that may not have seen a lot of MotoGP, on, you know, NBC, which is the other network compared to CBS, which has already done several races this year so far here in the States. And so, you know, they just sort of jump right in with about, I don't know, maybe a minute of chitter chatter beforehand. And it was painful. I mean, they're talking, you know, Shaheen's bringing up NASCAR guys and, you know, Valentino Rossi or Nicky. Won't one of these MotoGP racers be so happy to win on the same track that like Jeff Gordon and Dale Earnhardt races on? And you know, Kevin Schwantz sort of,
I bet even
ran with it.
Even but Hayden is like, probably knows like two or three NASCAR rider names.
Yeah. Well, they said Rossi was a fan as well.
Of NASCAR?
And that Rossi had taken some time on his trip here, and then he went to New York and did some sightseeing, and then he had tried to work something up to go visit some NASCAR guy and this and that. And I was a little bit like, are you sure? I'm not 100% sure that Rossi even knows what NASCAR is, but you know, maybe he does. I mean, he's an eclectic guy. I mean, the rally stuff, I mean, rally is a very, very cool sport, but it is a, you know, it's a bit of an unusual mix to be a MotoGP racer and then go race at, like, you know, second tier rally racing, but whatever. So, you know, like I said, I sort of started watching it and I just turned it off. But then when I was to get it onto the computer, I had to run it on the DVR again and it had to be real time and this and that. So I kind of had it playing in the background while I was doing some other stuff and I was kind of semi listening to it. And they really did sort of warm up, I thought, through the broadcast, and it got a little better. Maybe Ralph Shaheen and Kevin Schwantz needed to sort of
meld,
develop their dynamic. Yeah, meld a little bit.
Well, I think
something.
Everybody was kind of thrown into what was going to be happening. Like, they probably weren't even sure whether they were going to be on the air. Whether is the race going to be delayed? So
that's a possibility.
They probably got tossed into it. I mean, you know, I'm actually still to this moment amazed. I finally finished putting all the photos together. And I was looking at the race photos and it just really hit me. Like, they actually managed to get the race started at the time that they said they would.
Right.
Unbelievable. Considering what was going on the track, it was unbelievable. So I think a lot of people probably were just sitting waiting for the call. Is it going to happen? Is it going to happen? So I don't know. I wouldn't give them too much grief over that.
No, I was going to take him to task and rip him up because I think that the earlier races in the season with Greg White and Kevin Schwantz doing the play by play and the color commentary, I thought they did a pretty good job. I thought Greg White did a real good job of drawing Kevin out because Kevin Schwantz is the kind of it seemed like he was pretty content to just watch the race, but you know, you sort of lob him a few, you know, lob him a few sort of softball questions and everything and kind of draw him out. And it seemed like they had a thing going. And other than Greg White's, habit of shouting and everything was very, very exciting all the time, but you know, at least, hey, the guy's excited. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You know, but on the other hand, he's excited to be there. He's watching a sport that Greg White has raced motorcycles out there. So, you know, that gives him a lot of cred in my view. So,
and I believe Kevin Schwantz raced a little bit too.
Did he? Yeah. Wow. I didn't know that. But, in any case, yeah, you know, hey, it's still, you know, they got a long ways to go. But the thing is also, if it's going to be on over-the-air TV over here in the United States, on whatever channel it's going to be on, CBS, NBC, whatever, and all of that business, they have to treat it a little bit more as just this sort of weirdo oddball sport that we're going to throw in because, you know, golf's not on or something like that. You know, it's like, come on, this is a regular sport where you've got races just about pretty much every 2 weeks over a almost 7-month period, right?
Yeah, yeah, totally agree with you. It's you can't just throw an audience into that and expect them to be able to follow what's going on. There's Americans who don't know who Nikki Hayden is.
Oh, I mean,
there's motorsports fans. I'm talking about people who actually watch Speed who probably don't know who Nikki Hayden is.
Sure, sure. Yeah. So they do need to tailor it to that audience, but they have to take it. They have to really put in a good effort. They have to take it seriously. They have to give it maybe a little bit more time. Come on, guys. You know, give it a pre-race show. You know, give us a grid walk, stuff like this, you know.
A guy with a British accent.
That would be awesome. and they this is, you know, if they want it to ever be somewhat successful, then that's what they're really, really going to have to do. And I think that especially after we talked to Steve Parrish at Indy, comparing the BBC coverage versus the Eurosport coverage, that, you know, the BBC audience that, you know, and they know that their audience is a bit less hardcore MotoGP fan. So they have to somewhat tailor the commentary for that. You know, there's more explanations. There's maybe a little bit, less technical of conversation, or at least if you are going to get technical, you explain it in depth. And, that's the kind of thing that they need to do, but without making all these NASCAR comparisons and stuff all the time, because I mean, you know, that's just unnecessary. So that's my vote.
Got it.
All right. So moving on, let's talk about tires a little bit, huh?
Well, there's two bits of news, and I think one is we can go kind of short. Both of these come from motorcycle news. .com via Kropotkin, because I always read Kropotkin first, MotoGPMatters.com, and he gives a fantastic summary of what's going on. But remember the whole split with Team Scott and JR possibly running two bikes instead of one?
Yeah.
That's dead now, it looks like.
Okay. And when did that? I didn't see that story yet.
It just popped up, and it looks like Team Scott basically gets the Honda. And Yuki Takahashi is gonna come from 250s, so you know, following in the Vizioso's footsteps, pretty much, you know, in line. He's been doing really well in 250s, considering the Honda is not a bike that's being developed anymore for several years now.
The 250cc Honda.
250s, yeah. And he's gonna come into Team Scott, where the seat's obviously being opened up by Dovizioso, who's still not announced, but you know, we all assume he's going to HRC. But the other, there's no seventh bike basically coming from Honda, which means that JR is without a bike. And they were the guys who were kind of linked to like Spee's last hope for MotoGP. But basically, the last door has closed for Spee's, and MotoGP.
Yeah, yeah, no, exactly. And we talked about that on previous shows. We've talked about that, I know, like, you know, amongst ourselves and stuff, of why it happened, why, you know, why the music's ending and you're the guy standing up, Ben. What the hell happened? And I'm not 100% sure if we mentioned it in our last show or not, but I think he screwed himself. He was asking for too much money. And
Yeah, there's a really funny thread on Right On 2 where there's a they're blaming his mom.
Yeah, yeah. I love that's, it. I, yeah, I've seen that. Then the photo of the mom and stuff like that.
The mom standing in front of the garage with this just scowling look on her face, like, come on, it's my boy.
Yes. In any case, whoever it was, whatever reason it was, yeah, I think that was of their own doing. So if he does, assuming Spies does make it into MotoGP at some point or another, is his mom going to be then like Lewis Hamilton's dad is for him?
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
The Formula One thing where he's constantly interfering. So I hope not. I mean, you don't see Valentino Rossi's dad showing up in there, and he'd have a lot more credibility having been a former racer. And then, Earl Hayden, but he seems like he's okay. He's tolerated. He's not interfering. He's just, you know, there.
So anyway, you know, there's still the possibility of Spies going to World Superbikes on a Yamaha ticket, apparently. Like,
They're losing everybody because, Haga's got Bayliss's Ducati ride,
which is actually really interesting news, because I thought that basically last year Haga came closest to winning the championship, he'd never get the chance because the Ducks would own him. Now he's going to have a Duck. It's going to be really interesting. He's been on that R1 since it was introduced in 98 and the R7, right? So you were about to say it. I know.
No, I know. I wasn't. I was going to hold back, but
could feel the lightning bolt coming. And so that's 10 years, an entire decade on one with Yamaha.
So, and he's done very well this season.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
And I'm not 100%. I mean, Bayliss gets a workout on that motorcycle. You know, he's a bit like Stoner is in MotoGP, where it takes a certain talent to bring the best out of that motorcycle. Because, I mean,
Fabrizio has not been able to do anything remotely as well as Bayliss and Biaggi and Zaus. I mean, Zaus most of the time is figuring somewhere in midfield.
He crashes a lot too.
Well, he does crash a lot, of course. Yeah. He's always crashed a lot. And Biaggi's been crashing a lot, but last year he didn't crash so much. So, you know, it's a difficult bike to ride.
It is. It is indeed a difficult bike. And Fabrizio on the other, you know, if you're going to have a Ducati that's the one, you know, the other factory ride, you know, and Fabrizio's pulled off 2 seconds and 4 third places this year.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget World Superbikes, they have twice as many races. So that's out of 18 races, you know, and I mean, he's eighth in the point standings, this and that and the other, you know, and Bayliss is just smoking him. And I'm just, I know, I was thinking that same thing. It's like, boy, is Haga really making the right decision here? You know, wouldn't he go out there on the Yamaha that he knows and does well on, and now he doesn't have Bayliss to worry about, and he can go out and pick up the championship?
Right.
I know, and it does make you wonder. And I hope we don't see that he made a colossal mistake as far as his career is concerned. Who knows? Maybe his style will suit that bike.
Maybe.
Yeah. Total digression there. But yeah, I was wondering. But then, and so supposedly Corser's going to be going elsewhere as well, which I'm not 100% sure where he's going. Have you seen that?
You know, that's another interesting one, because it almost sounds like he's going to stay involved with Yamaha but not race, which is really weird. Like, what, he's going to be a test rider for
a
World Superbike
team? Well, he is like, you know, weird. 73, but still. I mean,
that guy actually looks a lot older than he actually is.
How old is he? He's 36. He has that
McWilliams
look,
you know. Him and McWilliams are like twins. They look like twins, but McWilliams is like 43. So anyway,
so Spies could go there.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's a long shot. So this whole AMA thing is starting to kind of gel. Maybe he'll just stay.
Exactly. And that kind of brings up one of the other topics that we wanted to talk about. Several, I don't know if any, you know, listeners out there, if you get Cycle News or not. Cycle News is a fantastic magazine. Unfortunately, because it is a weekly, I tend to, they build up and I get this little pile of back stock Cycle Newses. And I finally read the September 10th issue. Yesterday, the day before. And they were talking about a that DMG and AMA, the Daytona Motorsports Group, which is taking over the AMA Pro Series, and we've talked about this on the show before, that the manufacturers and DMG are coming together. Finally, they are going to talk again, and that maybe this whole breakaway series, the USSB, and all of that is, you know, will not come to pass. That they will save AMA Pro Road Racing, and which I would very much like to see. And if in that case, that's going to be where Spies is at.
Right. The money will come back and all that good stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, and yeah, if they, you know, I mean, obviously Suzuki was extremely happy with the status quo because they win all the races. But you know, none of the other manufacturers liked the stuff that DMG was talking about either. So, and the problem was is that all these rules and artificial playfield leveling things that DMG wanted to have, which basically would make it like really expensive club racing. Okay, so this is supposed to level the field for privateers so the privateers can do better, right? But and this is actually covered in Henny Ray Abrams' story here in Cycle News. He's saying, what's the goal of the privateers? They want to get a factory ride, you know, and if there's no benefit to getting a factory ride eventually, then, you know, it would really gut the series. It really, really would.
Yeah, so. That's true.
Yeah, so I thought that was interesting stuff. Well, all right. We're a little bit all over the map today because it's, like we said, it was a bit of a slow news week. Not a whole lot of pre-show stuff from Motegi. Other than that, let's see. What's our championship standing as far as MotoGP? Is Rossi going to lock it up at...
He can. He can lock it up. He's got, yes. He's got 89 points ahead. There's 100 points left. Right? No, sorry. Wait.
I'm right. 80, he's 87 points ahead, and counting Motegi, there's 100 points left.
Right, right. There you go.
So he could, Rossi wins it. That puts him at 312. Yeah, 312. My math skills are sharp as ever. And if Rossi wins it, and let's see, then that would mean that Stoner would have to come in.
Well basically, if he finishes where. He's more than 75 points ahead, and there's, you know, if he's 76 points ahead at the end of Motegi, he's the champion.
Right. And actually, that's looking very, very good.
So because, basically, 11 points. He'd have to lose more than 11. Yeah, he'd have to lose more than 11 points in order for that not to happen. And the only people that can really make a dent in that, of course, Stoner and Pedrosa. Pedrosa's seven. An extra 7 points behind, so that's really hard. I don't think Pedrosa is going to be able to do it, and I don't think Stoner is going to be able to do it because I think Stoner he was talking about even just taking the rest of the season off.
That was passed around. I think that's done now.
I think it's done.
Yeah,
I think he is going to actually finish the season out because his scaphoid injury looks like it's actually gotten better.
Yeah,
so.
So basically, if Rossi gets 11 points, means takes fifth place.
Well, he has to get 11 points more than Stoner, basically.
Okay, right.
In order to lock it up.
Actually, yeah. Let's see if he if he took fourth place, that would give him 13 points, and he'd have 300 points. And then if Stoner won it, Stoner would have 225. That would put them 75 points apart. Which, with 70 points left on the table, means there could be a tie, right? But where are we at in wins? I think Rossi is
has
7 wins so far, and that would tie the wins.
Yeah,
too.
Exactly. So
there is a
chance. It's a crazy chance. One where that would involve Rossi not finishing 3 races at all.
Yeah, that's true.
Where there could be a tie that would be decided on races, and you know.
And you'd be getting podiums, that as second places and third places and all of that to see who won and so on and so forth. But
it's
in effect,
happen.
No. Safe money's going to say that Rossi's locking this championship up because, I mean, that was assuming that he took fourth in Japan, which he'll probably do better. So,
yeah,
that's going to, you know, pretty much kind of covers it there, doesn't it?
It's not really his track.
No.
You know, well... mainly because Caparossi has been winning and for a long time, and even in 2004 it was Tamara that won. So Rossi hasn't. I don't know what if Rossi has won. Did he win in 2003? I think he won 2003, but he hasn't won there in a long time. He's been on the podium a few times, and but it's, you know, it's a track that actually suits a Ducati very well. And last year it was a, you know, kind of an ugly wet race, and we're getting kind of mixed reports on the weather, but it looks like it's been raining in Japan like crazy. Apparently they're actually expecting a dry weekend, but with wet on both sides means that, you know, a little bit of bad luck and we're going to end up with a wet race again.
Yeah.
And you know, nothing wrong with a real wet race. It's just that last year's Motegi race was pointless. It was worthless.
Yeah, when it's that. Yeah, I agree. And I mean, even like you, even when you say nothing wrong with a real wet race, I still prefer to see a race in the dry.
Yeah. We have this thread going on right on too about the control tire, which I guess we should probably get into talking about, because one of the things that we're expecting to hear at Motegi is the announcement of a single tire rule for 2009 with Bridgestone as the supplier.
Okay.
Which is something that, you know, you and I have, I think, agreed is just not a good thing for the sport.
No, I think we're in agreement that, well, certainly I don't want to see a true rule. You know what I mean? If nature takes its course and all the top guys end up on Bridgestones because the Bridgestone is the better tire, well, okay. But at least then Michelin might have some sort of incentive, chance, what have you, you know, to come back. But if Michelin's completely locked out and then it's only Bridgestone, yeah. And that was the other back page thing in Cycle News. And I mean, this is realistically for you and I that we've been talking about, this is nothing that we haven't already said, but it is, you know, it's in the mainstream journalism and all of this that, you know, not too long ago, this was completely unthinkable, but now all of a sudden the riders are all on board with it. Yeah. Because Michelin is having such a tough time and the riders know that they just want something competitive. And apparently last year, both Hayden and Pedrosa wanted Michelin's and HRC turn them down. But to make a rule, I think, is just a mistake. I just don't like it for MotoGP.
Yeah, it really is. It's a huge mistake because it can't be undone.
Right.
It's a rule that you write in. You're not going to erase this rule ever. It's going to be a very long time before anybody thinks, hey, you know what? Remember when we used to race different tire brands? When was that? That was like in the beginning of the 21st century, you know, because how do you unlock a rule like that? You can't.
Right. Well, and once the manufacturer is out of it for such a long time, even if they say all of a sudden, oh, wow, we're going to let all kinds of different manufacturers come in, you know, they're at such a disadvantage that it's, you know, it's like, forget it. So then they're like Dunlop in MotoGP, where they get to the point that they can't give away their tires.
When they had all the rules stacked for them.
Right.
Yeah, and then you know, so the thing is that we're entering a very dangerous territory here because we're chasing results with rules and trying to make the sport more exciting by rules, which has never ever worked. A lot of people will bring up World Superbike and say, "Hey, look what happened there! You know, Pirelli came in as a control tire and the racing got really good." Well, I don't remember racing ever actually sucking in World Superbike since the very beginning.
Well, it was the Ducati Cup for a long time.
Yeah, and but that I think had nothing to do with the tires.
Yeah, I know. I agree. It had to do with the other rules.
Yeah. So, well, the rules were definitely stacked for V-twins, you know.
For a while they were.
But yeah, but so the thing is, like, I don't actually know of a series where making this kind of a really gigantic change, especially in motorcycle racing, any racing where rubber meets asphalt, you know, the rubber is really an important part. It's less so when it's like dirt racing or something like that, but definitely
that's going to get some emails.
Well, no, I mean, I'm not saying that the tire isn't important in dirt racing. I'm just saying that like the wear of a tire on asphalt is much more critical when you're these tires really just don't they barely last the distance, right? You're not going to have that kind of a thing happening on dirt. So, I mean, you know, guys use like one set of tires and all the way down the car sometimes, or used to.
Yeah.
Anyway, but the thing is that you know, this is an incredibly important component of the motorcycle, and I think that we have two fantastic riders in the championship right now, Rossi and Stoner, who are so much better than the rest of the field that they're making the racing somewhat boring, but just because they're so freaking good, right?
Yeah.
If we're going to be making rules, this is the same thing that they're kind of doing. They were doing in AMA. You know, they were like looking at these results with Mladen and Spies running away, and they were like, "Oh, well, how can we fix this?" You know, well, why don't you just kick the best riders out and just make it a mediocre rider series? You know, I mean,
yeah,
that's not fair because none of those guys are mediocre riders. But like that's basically what we're trying to make the racing artificially interesting.
Sure, and it is a mistake. I think you might have an argument. Well, I don't know. You know, the four wheel series that have all gone to spec tires, and so many of them have. But it is different four wheels compared to two. You know, motorcycle
besides,
racing.
I don't think it made a difference. I really don't think it made a difference. I think that that's a myth.
It'll make differences at certain tracks and in certain situations, always.
Yeah.
But you're right. As a whole and stuff, yeah, you're right. Probably not. But in any case, so you're saying, though, then that according in Pedrosa's mind, that the only thing that for stopping him beating Stoner consistently is his tires, right? And so this is why he switched to the Bridgestones.
Right. So he better prove it now.
That is not true. So that is, but I know, and it's also it's such a slippery slope because they start introducing these dumbass rules to reduce costs, which the tire mishmash that we have had going on for the last year, you know, while of let's reduce the number of tires. The manufacturers still have to bring a lot of tires to the track that never get used. Because the riders might select them. They're not limited on their selection as much. You know, they have to make their selection on Thursday, but other than that, they can choose from a wide, wide range. So they have to have a lot of tires to choose from. So that means it's not making it any cheaper for the manufacturers. They're still making as many tires. The 990s going down to 800 cc's. So let's slow the motorcycles down because it's just too darn dangerous and everything. Yeah, corner speeds have increased. You know, all these other rules. And then when they start, you know, the next one is going to be the spec ECU, which is going to rear its ugly head again.
Yep. Yeah, because of traction control and...
Right. And the dumbest thing I can think of for motorcycle racing, you know, especially, you know, the MotoGP class, because this stuff does trickle down, folks. I mean, I've had emails from people and that have made very, very good, clear, concise, and cogent arguments that no, it doesn't really trickle down, that the stuff that's in GP is so, so much different than street bike. Yes, that's true. You're right. I'm not going to go out and buy a set of MotoGP class slicks for my street bike. But don't kid yourself, the stuff that these companies learn and do through the research and stuff, it does have an effect, even if it's just, if nothing else, making the corporate mind that much stronger as, you
totally,
know, guys.
Totally.
That are,
and just yeah. making a stage for manufacturers to show their prowess. You know, it's like if you make a racing series with a spec tire, that manufacturer loses a lot of you know, bragging rights, and the other manufacturers have absolutely no incentive to really, really develop new compounds and, you know, whatever. And when they do this ECU stuff too, because it's probably going to happen once they start, I think we're going to start seeing more and more of this. I'm going to go ahead and read Tornado's post because I think it really belongs at this point.
Yeah. This is, yeah. Read that post.
Right onto Tornado. I hope you don't mind I'm doing this, but this is what he posted. He said, Dorna's goals appear to be increasing parity amongst the competition, reducing corner speed, and reducing cost. The list of proposed changes include 1, control tires, 2, spec ECU, 3, technology development limits, like no electronic suspension. They actually have said that. You know, they're like questioning the idea of electronic suspension.
Sure.
Which is something that would trickle down to us, by the way.
And it's already showed up in World Superbikes just the other day.
Yeah. That's right, in the Yamahas. So here is my proposed, this is Thornego going again. Here is my proposed solution to meet Dorna's goals. 1, implement a control tire. All tires must be made available to all riders. It will be made by a single manufacturer. 2, increase the weight of each bike dramatically. This will reduce corner speeds and top speeds. 3, to increase parity across teams, each manufacturer must build a complete motorcycle without being able to specify who will ride it. Each team can purchase their race bike from any factory. And 4, to control technology development, each manufacturer must produce a minimum of 1,000 units of each part and make them available to any purchaser. This will provide a strong disincentive to produce one-off parts for a favored rider. This will increase competition by making the bike slower and heavier. With these new rules in place, Dorna will need to change how they market the series. Instead of calling it MotoGP, they should include the word "world" in the title of the series to make it clear that there's a global reach of the series. And in order to help alleviate any doubts regarding the reduced capabilities of the motorcycles, they should also use the word "super" in the series name. This will ensure spectators know that they are watching the top-tier bikes. Costs will be dramatically lowered. There will be more teams and bikes on the grid. The racing will be close and exciting. Hence, MotoGP should be renamed Super World Bikes.
I love that post when I read it. Yes, clap applause. Thank you very much, Thornado, for that, because I did. I read that and I cracked up. It was funny stuff.
And laughed.
Yeah, and it is. It's like that, and that's what I'm saying. And that's it might sound a bit pretentious or snobby or whatever, but come on, this is MotoGP. This is the prototypes. You know, we don't care about that Joe Schlub can go out and buy this motorcycle. You know, freaking rule book should be 2 pages long, you know. Let them do whatever they want.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is that the swings happen. I mean, Michelin owned the series for so long. It's great to see that Bridgestone actually managed to outdevelop somebody who had such a stranglehold on the series for so long.
Right.
And then, you know, within 2 years of that happening, we're like, oh, okay, well, you know, this racing sucks. And racing, come on. This season, we had probably one of the best races ever. And Indy was actually a good race, too. We had a lot of good racing this year. Sure, it's not 2003. Actually, 2003 was a pretty crappy season, too, because Rossi just ran away with it. But 2004 was a great season. The main variable here is that we've got some riders that are just much better than others, and
right.
and the rules are going to chase the results. That's lame,
right? So exactly. So you might as well just give Casey Stoner an extra, you know, 50 kilos of ballast to carry around,
right.
And you know, and that'll make it even. And
Valentino Rossi has to, you know, wear I don't know.
One hand tied behind their back.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, that would be awesome. And the other riders get
eyes
swords.
Closed.
And yeah, you know, so that then you'll have nice even racing. But yeah, you're right. To make all this stuff, and then they, I love the price point argument, because it never makes it cheaper. It, you know, it's like,
as long as these teams have the money to spend, they will spend it on something.
Exactly.
Maybe now it'll be like, you know, catering, better food.
Yeah, sure.
They're
gonna
have to have controlled canaps, you know.
Controlled catering. You will only get the little AMPM burgers.
White Castle.
Yes, White Castle. We never got to enjoy White Castle when we were out there in Indy, but I've had it before. So,
anyway, I think it's terrible, and I think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I do too, and I think it's a damn shame, and somewhat ruining the pretentious snobbiness of my sport. And
you know, 2 years like from it. Now, we're going to be so super excited about the racing and
Oh yeah, the racing will still be good. I know. It will
very likely be better.
It might be.
You know, it might be better, and it might not even hurt the chances of. I mean, the technology development of tires for us lowly guys who eventually get the trickle down effect. That still does not excuse this kind of a rule, because I think this is a development series. I like the fact that the book is so small, the rule book is so small, and that we get to see such incredible, you know, technological achievements being made there. And that's gonna end basically.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it's somewhat in long term view, it's a rash decision. It's come up quite quickly, relatively speaking. And you're making a rule that's going to be very, very difficult to undo, based on the events of, well, realistically, two seasons. And that you're right, Jules, that the racing has not been bad. Yes, you had, you know, the runaway race up front, but farther down the field, it's you know, if that's the part that you can see ever, it's still just as good as ever.
Yeah, and, here's a tip for Dorna. Why not, you know, do a better job of, like, providing multiple ways to watch the race. You know, I want to see multiple angles. I want to see we've got 18 riders on the field. It wouldn't be that. It's not a gigantic field. We could be watching all those other racing action that's going on out there.
Right. Well, they particularly they every motorcycle now. That since they went to terrestrial cameras and stuff, every motorcycle has a couple cameras on it, I do believe. Because the rules were that, like, the top 10 in the standings had to have two cameras.
Right, right.
Everybody else sort of got scattered around. I think they've got at least two. And that reminds me of an email that I got from Richard Zane in England, and he sent this a while ago, and I thought it was so, so cool. And I'll put a link to this on the website. First of all, this was when the Formula One race was at Spa in Belgium, which is MotoGP should go back to Spa, by the way. So nephew was working at Spa, and it turns out that what his nephew does is he works for a company called Kangaroo TV that manufactures and rents a little handheld video device. And you get it when you're a spectator at the Formula One race. So you watch the race feed, the in-car cameras, race stats, etc., on this little mini TV with a headphone. So I guess apparently they have them at some NASCAR races and stuff. And it's just like, that would be the coolest thing. I would pay, you know, what's the rental on something like that? I don't know, $100, $200, whatever it is. That would make watching the race when you're actually there so much more, because that's half the problem with going to a road race. It's actually better on television as far as seeing everything that's going on.
Oh yeah. Especially on a flat track like India. You know, we never did check out those grandstands, but people did say they could see, like, you know, one third of the race.
Yeah. But then everything is, like, you know, little specks.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a long way away.
Yeah.
And, whereas, you know, if you know, on television, you get the great camera angle, et cetera, et cetera. But the whole point of going to the race is the whole experience, everything, the sights, the sounds, the smells, the beer. And, but to get something like that, this little handheld TV where you get to choose what camera angle, or even if you're only just watching the Dorna feed, that would be great. And, whatever, they need to get that. So MotoGP, check out that Kangaroo TV, and I'll put up a couple links on the website for that stuff too. So
this is very cool.
Yeah, and thanks, Richard, for telling me about that. I thought it was a kind of a cool little toy. So, well, all right. We got anything else going on?
Nope.
All right. Yeah, it's a bit of a short show today, but hey, that'll make a lot of people happy, and we're still almost at an hour. So, you know, hey. Why don't we figure that we'll talk again next week, and we'll do a Motegi wrap-up, and we'll talk about how Rossi has or possibly has not mathematically locked up the championship and all of that good stuff.
Yep, and we should probably hear something about this tire rule. If the weekend goes by without an announcement, that'll be interesting.
That could be as telling as anything, exactly. Right. Yeah.
Because, so, you know, we do know that we had the Espoleta tire rule 2006 version
Right, which I think was just him getting Michelin and Bridgestone you know, a threat.
Yep.
To get them yep. to go. But we also this everything we've heard so far.
This time around, it's not a. It's a very different dynamic.
Yeah, that's true.
I think the writers are driving it too.
But the word on the street's always been that Bridgestone did not particularly want to be the sole supplier. The article in Michael Scott's article in Cycle News was saying that it could very well be Michelin being the sole supplier, which you know now that, you know that's a couple weeks ago. So things are constantly changing.
This Motegi announcement would have to be Bridgestone. If they're going to go make that kind of an announcement at Motegi, it's going to be about Bridgestone.
To match it up. That would make a certain amount of sense, yeah. Although it's not like they have a track coming up that makes it all that particularly Michelin-friendly, other than, I guess, Valencia, well, just because it's somewhat nearby.
Not Motegi, though.
Yeah, not Motegi. Yes, exactly. There you go. Not Motegi. So, well, all right, there we go again. We've, you know, we're starting to say our goodbyes and everything. We start rambling on. So why don't we go ahead and sign on off and save some of this stuff for next week. And it was really great talking with you, Jules.
All right, man. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, that's going to do it for today's show. Hope you enjoyed it. Thanks very much for downloading it. Always appreciate that you guys take the time, and guys and girls out there, ladies, take the time to listen to the show. Appreciate it a lot. And we will be back again next week. We're going to talk about Motegi and events that have occurred there, because that, of course, will be in the past by the time we start recording it. So we're going to take care of that. Don't forget, if you're in the United States and you're watching it on television, it's back on speed this weekend, and it's at the more or less normal time, which I still haven't actually checked exactly what time that is, because, you know, I just program it into the recorder thing. But it's somewhere around ballparky noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, something like that. But please, check your TV guide, your local listings, what have you. Make sure you watch this race. It's going to be a good one. It's just that because it ends in Japan, times might be a little different if you're watching it live. So be aware of that, and we will talk to you again next week. If you listen to this far, you know that it's time for the disclaimer. And sometimes you might get tired of hearing these disclaimers. I sort of occasionally get sick of recording them or making up new, slightly entertaining versions, because I've kind of already gone through all the obvious ones. And now I'm just sort of trying to rummage around and find something, somehow, some way to say in a different way that MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I am solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorner Sports SL, and the MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorner Sports SL. All the other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.